to our third episode of Season 2 of Medical Design Briefs podcast. I'm Sherry Trigg, Editor and Director of Content for Medical Design Briefs. Presented by the editors of SAE Media Group throughout the year, this new series will cover a variety of technologies that are poised to transform healthcare. In this season, we are taking an in-depth look at high-tech health, particularly biosensors and wearable injectors. My guest today is Ash Anwar, Senior Director of Data and AI at Molecular U, who will talk to us about the convergence of biosensors and AI. This episode addresses the integration of artificial intelligence with biosensors, exploring how AI algorithms analyze and interpret the data collected, leading to more accurate diagnostics, predictive insights, and personalized health recommendations. Ash, can you talk a little bit about your role and the role of the vast data sets in training AI algorithms to recognize the intricate patterns and subtle indicators of serious and chronic diseases like cancer and autism? What are the limitations and possibilities?
No, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm the Director of Data and AI here at Molecular U. And so my role really is leading the team and looking at the molecules. So the company is really centered around looking at the hundreds of molecules that exist in our blood and the interactions and relationships that these molecules, specifically the proteins and the metabolites in the blood, interact with each other that lead to either a healthy condition or in certain cases towards specific different types of diseases, especially chronic diseases that you mentioned. So we're looking at this vast array of data sets. And when you have a lot of data, it plays a really pivotal role in using AI because it allows a human is unable to process and analyze at that level of information. So tremendous scale of information. So that's where we utilize the AI for the algorithms to become skilled at recognizing these really hidden patterns in the multiomics, we call it. So the metabolites and the proteins. And these are very often associated with like the earliest indicators of disease. So this is way before anyone has symptoms that may show up. So pre-symptomatic, but the disease process has started and there's indicators or early flags that exist in the multiomics that we can detect in the blood. And using AI, we can identify these complex relationships that can allow us to then make a prediction and say, hey, this individual is on the trend or risk towards getting a certain type of disease, whether that's type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease. We're heavily focused in neurology in terms of Alzheimer's and cognitive decline. We have signature for autism spectrum disorder. And we just published a paper that's coming out in April around early detection of pancreatic cancer. So we were able to detect pancreatic cancer at stage 1.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's tremendous power. But of course, as you mentioned, there's limitations, right? There's limitations.
Right. Yeah. So does early detection through AI contribute to the development of personalized treatment plans?
Yes. So this is something we've started to see where, you know, traditionally a lot of medicine and a lot of research is really centered around looking at populations. And yes, there is value looking at populations and subgroups, but we've noticed that in the cases of a lot of diseases, there's a lot of different subtyping within the disease class. So for example, someone may be at risk of developing type 2 diabetes and perhaps the end result being unable to control sugar, for example, is kind of the symptom, is the classical hallmark of the disease. However, the way they get there is very different sometimes. Some people go through an inflammatory route that leads to insults to, you know, the pancreas, things like that. Sometimes it's something more autoimmune. Sometimes it's something where it is classically just very through lifestyle driven. So there's different methods of how this may happen. Cardiovascular disease is another really great example. Is it an issue with the lipid dysfunction and creating the plaques and atherosclerotic plaques that exist that lead to a heart attack? Or is it more through inflammation is another big player, right? So we're able to use these multiomics and AI to be like, to understand which mechanism is really driving the disease, even though the output may be very similar.
Right. So what do you feel AI's role is in shifting from reactive healthcare to proactive healthcare?
Yeah, I think our traditional medical system is very reactive, right? Because we've been talking about symptomatic, like individuals don't really go to the doctor until it's, you know, they exhibit a symptom. And I would say a lot of us too, and I'm speaking about myself personally, is even when I have a symptom, I will just sometimes brush it off, right? And just be like, oh, it's not important enough to go to the doctor and let the issue persist until, you know, we do have to go to the doctor. But I think shifting more towards a proactive approach where we take control of our health and really understand how our bodies are kind of developing and where we are in terms of our state of health empowers us to take more control. So myself, speaking about myself, looking at kind of the biomarkers, understanding that I do have, for example, through my family history, understanding that I do have a family history of diabetes and cardiovascular disease, but I don't really feel that now. But looking at the biomarkers and those biomarkers indicating that, yes, actually, Ash, you're at elevated risk, has now pushed me into being like, okay, I need to monitor this and I need to actually eat better and exercise. I'm not as invincible as I think I am.
Or want to be. Right.
Yes, exactly.
So molecular you, how does molecular you assess an individual's distinct blood profile to anticipate those potential health risks and catch the chronic diseases early? Maybe you can share some success stories.
Sure, absolutely. So as I mentioned, like molecular you, we analyze right now blood samples from patients. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking for specifically is we assess a panel of proteins and a panel of metabolites. So there's hundreds of these in our panel. And what these are basically, so what metabolites are like the chemical byproducts of the chemical reactions that occur in our body. So dynamically changing, they change with stress, with our sleep patterns, what we eat, all that kind of stuff. So very dynamic. Metabolites tend to be quite a bit more volatile and very dynamic to things that are happening maybe on a day-to-day basis. The proteins are more the structural and functional elements of the body. They change, but it takes a little longer for them to change, but they do change in response to like good habits, for example, exercise, or let's say chronic inflammation can lead down to a shift in these proteins. So what we're doing is we're kind of looking at these molecules in the blood, their measurements and their concentrations. And then we're comparing the individual's blood molecular profile to our database of predictive models that we've already designed that have these unique signatures for these different cases of disease, right? So we've spent quite a bit of time amassing samples of people with known certain disorders, applying the AI and machine learning to uncover the hidden patterns and determine that, yes, if this signature exists, then the individual is at risk. And so we compare a person's unique signature to that and then being able to output, let's say, like, hey, there is a potential risk because your molecular profile matches what we've seen for, let's say, cardiovascular disease. But that being said, I think one of the really powerful things that we've discovered, and this pertains to the pancreatic cancer example, is that we are so unique ourselves, right? And it's very hard to, let's say, look at a reference range for a certain biomarker and say, yes, that is normal. People are very diverse and very unique. And so in the case of our pancreatic cancer case study, which will be published later this month, we've been monitoring an individual for a number of years. So I think about 4 or 5 years. And in year three, what happened was there was this big shift in their biomarkers. And because we've been able to create kind of a baseline of like, okay, this is normal for this individual, second year's test, okay, it looks normal. When it came to like the third or fourth test where there was this massive change, right, a lot of biomarkers just elevated. It seemed a very weird situation to have such a shift in this individual's baseline. So when we went in and took a look at why these biomarkers had rapidly changed, what were they associated with, we noticed that our system was flagging pancreatic cancer. So we actually informed the doctor and said, hey, we're getting this kind of signal that's cancerous, associates with pancreatic cancer as being the top hit, but also like with cancers is kind of a nebulous kind of thing as well. So pancreatic cancer, number one hit, but we also saw breast cancer as well, potentially. So we notified the doctor, and the doctor met with the patient, and the patient indicated that they had a sibling who had an abdominal cancer, who had passed away for that. And so the doctor, taking that information, did some imaging, found lesions on her pancreas, and then went in to do a needle biopsy and did the standard, you know, cancer liquid test. I forget what it's called. It was a CEA antigen, I believe, which was indicative of cancer as well. And I think the doctor mentioned to us that this is the first time they've seen stage one pancreatic cancer before it's become metastatic, even though the biochemistry we were seeing was indicating metastatic cancer. So we caught it early.
And that's so incredible.
Yeah. It was a really incredible story. The patient, she's doing really well. She underwent surgery to remove the lesion. They got all of it, and there was no chemotherapy required, just recovery from the surgery. And then we did a follow-up test afterwards, after the surgery, and those markers that were like really elevated that indicated pancreatic cancer for us had actually all gone back down to normal, back to her baseline. So it was a really, really cool story.
That is very cool. So what are the benefits of integrating AI with biosensors for diagnostic accuracy and those personalized health recommendations?
I think there's four avenues that are really interesting with like kind of the integration of AI with like biosensors, right? Like our test, we're really looking at it's kind of static in a way, right? You come in, you give your blood, that's the moment of time we capture to analyze your blood and give you an output, right? With biosensors we have the potential to get into real-time monitoring, right? Looking at how does stress impact your day-to-day and things like that, right? Biosensors will provide this continuous stream of this like physiological data, including like heart rate, blood pressure. I know for myself, for example, I've been monitoring my blood pressure because I've been a little worried about, you know, the stress of, you know, this work, for example, and my blood pressure has been spiking, but one-time measurements are not indicative of everything. So I've had to look at it over time. And so very similarly, if we could integrate the AI with the biosensors and look at real-time monitoring, it'll be so much more of a powerful tool. There's a lot of, again, leveraging AI, being able to look at this longitudinal data will just enhance the sensitivity of the algorithm to recognize even more subtle patterns and be able to output this information. Enhanced tailoring, of course, right? With the biomarkers, again, we're looking at a snapshot of time, but over time, if we do real-time monitoring, the AI can almost understand and create almost like a real-time digital twin, really, right? And be able to tailor specific recommendations, being like, oh, in the morning, for instance, you know, we've noticed for the past few weeks that your biomarkers elevate in this direction during the morning. You know, maybe there's a good time frame for doing some meditation so that you can get back to normal baseline kind of thing. So really powerful in that aspect. And I think the fourth area is really remote care, right? Mm-hmm. So a patient will have to go into a clinic to give their blood sample. A lot of this information, when the patient receives it, should be administered by a healthcare professional, like a doctor, for example. So there is that work that needs to come into right. place where the patient will have to go in. This is sometimes difficult, especially if we're looking at like an elderly population or people who don't have access maybe to healthcare facilities. So trying to be equitable, this will allow us to get into potentially like remote care, like AI powered biosensors. Mm-hmm. You can do remote monitoring as well, and patients can look at their data, doctors can view their data, and the only need for them to come in is if something was flagging as being very urgent that they would need to come in for a clinic visit.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. So what challenges are associated with the convergence of biosensors and AI, and how are those challenges being addressed?
Yeah, well, I think the challenges, I mean, there's several challenges, I think, that kind of hinder the integration of biosensors and AI. And mm-hmm. one of the big ones is something that affects just AI in general with a lot of companies that work with AI is the quality of the data and also mm-hmm. the standardization of the data. The healthcare field especially tends to be quite fragmented with the type of data that's there, how it's captured, the quality of the data. What we do at Molecular U is we're really trying to integrate this data as well. So we face the issues of standardization mm-hmm. quite a bit too. So that'll be a challenge that we will need to address. It's very similar to even the biosensors. For example, the Apple Watch may not be equivalent in the way that it senses certain biometrics similar to a more sophisticated, let's say, Garmin device, which is dedicated for that kind of thing. So we have to look at like, okay, you know, someone's got an Apple Watch, is that data quality going to be sufficient for us to integrate, or would we rather have something that's much more designed to monitor heart rate at a much more comprehensive level? So that's the data quality and standardization. Of course, it would be amiss if I didn't talk about the other issue, which is privacy and security, right? I mean, it's very important. It's mm-hmm. very important to protect, you know, patient privacy and security. As we're getting more and more rich in our data, as data is becoming more accessible, it becomes a larger and larger target for hackers and people mm-hmm. who want to have nefarious things with the data. So absolutely need to be very rigorous in privacy and security and maintaining that data. Molecular U, of course, we not only adhere to HIPAA, but we have other even higher data quality standards, data security, sorry, standards that we follow. Mm-hmm. I think there's a European standard that is beyond HIPAA, which we try to adhere to as well. And I think another challenge, the third challenge, I think, is, of course, when we're working with medical data, you need to make sure that you have a rigorous set of kind of validation of the data, that your data can be trusted by the physician and the patient, and also by the regulatory bodies, right? Yeah. So the FDA, you want to make sure that we're like up to speed with that. In terms of Health Canada, for example, when we're here in Canada, we would mm-hmm. want to make sure that we're addressing all the regulatory compliance thing that we need to do as well. So these things, right, using data quality standardization, making sure cybersecurity, data privacy, and all that is up to speed, as well as establishing these clear guidelines for making sure data can be reproducible and validated, but also compliant right. with regulatory bodies would be a challenge that would need to be addressed.
So you really have touched on this somewhat already, but what ethical considerations should be taken into account when using AI to interpret the data from biosensors, particularly in terms of patient privacy and consent, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great question, honestly. I mean, it's as we're letting AI into our lives so seamlessly, right? And we need to be very considerate as to like what we allow and what we allow AI to do, what we allow AI to see and to be trained on and analyze. And it's a very pertinent case, right? Using AI to interpret this biosensor data, raises a lot of kind of ethical considerations around patient privacy and consent as well. So first of course, we talked about the data privacy. We want to make sure that the patient is well informed about, you know, what data is being used, how it's being used, has it been de-identified in a proper way that they're lead back to the individual, and establishing these rigorous data security protocols and protection. Secondly, informed consent is paramount.
Yes.
Right. We can't just, we can't just use data and without informing the patient, use the data to derive, say, other data products, or use that data without their consent for other experiments and things like that. We want to make sure that patient is well informed. We got to be very transparent with our data sharing with any kind of third parties. More likely right now, we don't share our data with any third party right now. But hypothetically, other companies in the space, you know, 23andMe is a good example where they have shared data with, I think, a pharmaceutical company. And so that raises the question about, like, well, what about the transparency and data sharing, right? If you, if the company wants to share with researchers who maybe could use the data to tailor even better therapies and things like that,
right?
That's great. It's good. It's a good intention, but you must inform the patient, and that they must be able to consent to removing their data if they so choose, that kind of stuff. There's a big question about insurance companies. Should insurance companies have this data, right? That's something where, you know, the data transparency about this sharing is going to be really crucial, and we really need to think about these ethical considerations.
So what future developments can we expect in the field of smart healthcare with continued integration of the of AI with biosensors from Molecular U and you know, other companies?
Of course. So I think, if I think a little bit about where kind of the future is going, I mean, first off, right away, I think the really exciting thing is this field of precision medicine, right? Not only are we being able to use AI and biosensors to collect, like, individual comprehensive level data, but also come up with really tailored, highly personalized treatments, and really look at an individual as an N of one, because everyone is really kind of unique and powerful, but also leverage vast amounts of data to compare someone to a population and uncover this depth of information. So I think that's really coming very soon, and Molecular is very heavily invested in this precision medicine area. And then we're also talking about moving into, so we do a lot of predictive analytics. So that's a very core part of what we do. And it's all about, as we mentioned, shifting from a reactive healthcare system to more of a proactive, where, you know, being able to understand where someone in, where an individual is trending towards, predicting these health risks, we could potentially nudge an individual to adopt more healthy habits. A lot of disease is lifestyle driven. You know, stress management is very eating healthy, exercising, and even honestly, not even exercising, just moving. We've noticed such a substantial shift in people's health, just going from a sedentary lifestyle to a simple walk every day, 10 minute, 15 minute walk. The body gets towards such a more healthy trajectory by not being completely sedentary. So prediction and moving them in that direction of healthy habits is really important. You know, remote and decentralized healthcare, I think, is another very big avenue in the future. As more and more wearables enter the market, individuals are going to be more and more interested in pairing that with AI to enable the remote monitoring. I think clinicians will be more potentially invested in looking at being able to monitor patients, especially like the elderly population. This will shift kind of the burden, or will ease the burden on the hospitals, the healthcare system. And then it'll, like the last one, just empower patients to be more conscious about their health. And then I think if I could talk about one more area that I think is really cool, is this non-invasive disease detection. A lot of testing for disease is very invasive. Some people don't like coming in for blood tests either. I don't like coming in for a blood test, right, with needles.
Right.
But But biosensors could help become a very non-invasive way of detecting disease, maybe through, sweat, even breath, like we exhale volatile compounds as well. The analysis over there, there's non-invasive imaging. There's a lot of very cool areas, and AI can integrate those kind of data sets and capture potentially other signals in association with these biosensors, and that could potentially indicate something early, which allows then a patient to be like, okay, maybe I do need to go in for a blood test to like validate some of the things. So non-invasive disease detection is another area that I think can go towards as well.
Yes, excellent. This everything you've talked about sounds so very interesting, and it looks like the future is open for lots of different technology developments. Ash, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your incredible knowledge of this area with our listeners. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure to be here and talk about a subject that I really love and I'm very excited about. So very thankful and grateful for being here.
Join us next week for episode 4, which will focus on advances that have led to the evolution of wearable devices. We will look at how these innovations are reshaping the future of healthcare, making treatments more precise, portable, and patient-friendly than ever before. If you'd like to provide feedback on this episode, please email me at sherry.trigg@saemediagroup.com. You can listen to this podcast at medicaldesignbriefs.com/podcasts or on your favorite podcast app such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you for listening, and watch for more coverage of exciting new technologies in the coming weeks.